But then as they get more sophisticated, we could think about adding in cognitive verbs, which are just words that represent our mental state or processes. So examples of these might be think, wonder, decide, imagine, remember, forget. And again, these are just words that are really important because they help make our thoughts transparent, which facilitates perspective taking.
Welcome back to the Upper Grand District School Board Social Learning Road Trip. Over the last few sessions, we have talked about the areas of social learning and competence that are supported by declarative language, who would benefit from the use of declarative language, and have touched on how to use declarative language. In this episode, we are excited to be joined again by Linda Murphy, author of the Declarative Language Handbook. And we're also joined by Dave Massessinal, who is a special education consultant with the Upper Grand District School Board. And Dave's work takes him across many different schools, working with a variety of students, and he is just beginning his journey with the use of declarative language. So thanks for joining us on our road trip, Dave and Linda, and we will hopefully learn some great new things today on how to implement the use of declarative language in our journeys in the classrooms. So in the previous episodes, we have discussed many ways in which declarative language can support our social competence. Linda, you've given us lots of great examples of declarative statements. Can you give us a quick overview of what the difference is between declarative and imperative languages?
Sure. So in a nutshell, a declarative statement is a comment where we are just sharing information. So it may be that we're sharing an observation that we have. It may be that we're sharing a thought or an idea that we have. We could be sharing a memory, something like that. But declarative language is invitational. So when we make a declarative statement, it's really important that we are just sharing and inviting communication, but not requiring a response back. Imperative communication is one that does demand a response of some sort back. It may place a demand on somebody to do something very specific or to say something very specific. So the language style is different, but at the heart of it, it's also just the intention. One intention is invitational and the other is a demand.
Okay, so then there's less emphasis on making a child comply in declarative language versus when we use imperatives, we have expectation that the student will do is what we're asking them to do.
Right. And one small distinction too that we didn't get into too much so far, but I want to be able to talk about it as well, is just the idea of question asking, which is also not declarative. Questions can be great, but they also can place demands or pressure on an individual. So the questions that I primarily try to avoid are ones that have a black and white right, wrong answer that places, again, that pressure. Or when I'm asking a question just to share ideas or information, I want it to be a question that is authentic in terms of communication, where I'm looking to gain information that I might not yet have about somebody's experiences, memories, opinions, ideas, that sort of thing.
Okay, so it's setting up a more authentic interaction.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so I'm wondering if we might be able to like take a deep dive into what makes a statement or comment declarative. Are there certain words that we should be using to make declarative language most effective for our students?
Yeah, so as I said, at the heart of it is you just want to make sure you're making a comment and that it's invitational in nature. Chapter 8 in Declarative Language Handbook is called The Nuts and Bolts, Constructing Declarative Statements. So I have a lot of ideas around what kind of language or vocabulary could go into declarative statements. And I have a matching declarative language cheat sheet on my website too that people could refer to. But things that I think about, so first, we just want it to be a comment. So it's not a demand. It's not a question. It could be very simple. You know, it doesn't have to get long and wordy. It could just be, hey, I see an airplane, or there's a dog barking, something like that. But then as they get more sophisticated, we could think about adding in cognitive verbs, which are just words that represent our mental state or processes. So examples of these might be think, wonder, decide, imagine, remember, forget. And again, these are just words that are really important because they help make our thoughts transparent, which facilitates perspective taking. But then at the same time, as we use cognitive verbs, our students also learn to use cognitive verbs, which helps them be understood by other people. So the more that they're able to talk about their thoughts, their ideas, whether they remember or forget something, or that they're deciding upon something, it just helps us all be better understood. Again, as we can represent those internal thoughts with our communication partners. We can also include words that emphasize uncertainty and possibility. So in a prior episode, we just talked about problem solving in terms of thinking in alternatives and possibilities, or the idea of brainstorming. But a really important part, or great part of that, is that when we are talking with students, we can just really sprinkle in these types of words, which just gets those creative or alternative thinking pathways going. So examples might be maybe, might, possibly, perhaps. So just words that have a little bit of uncertainty to them, but yet are still safe and not scary. Like, I wouldn't want to use these at a time when anxiety is really high and the child may not be able to handle the uncertainty. But when it's a time when we're regulated, we're having a positive conversation, we're brainstorming ideas, these are great words to get into our language models, which again then supports the student to start to use these words and therefore think in these ways or think in terms of possibilities. I also think about using words to communicate our senses, whatever it might be, like I heard that, I saw that, I smelled that even. Those can be really helpful, or perhaps to talk about feelings, like I feel worried, I feel frustrated by that. So as we bring in all those other types of vocabulary, again, what it really does is it helps us just at the end of the day be better understood by each other, or it allows our students to understand us better, but it also models the language for them so that they can then use that same type of language and statements on their own in the future to be understood better by others.
And I like the way that those cognitive verbs are really highlighted in the book, and about how those declarative words really help invite the student or whoever you're working with into that conversation.
Yeah, so it's great that we're encouraged through the use of those kinds of statements to make more comments. But I know that in the classroom, teachers often feel that they have to ask kids lots of questions in order to just engage students, gain information about what the students are thinking or what their, you know, what their behavior is all about. And so when I know that when I've gone into the classroom and suggested trying to make use of more declarative comments, the teachers are like, oh, one more thing, I've got to try differently. And so you can sort of feel the frustration a little bit, because it's one more thing, it's a different thing and a different way of engaging students. So do you have any suggestions of what an educator or anyone using declarative language can do if they find that they're stuck in using questions?
Yeah. So again, like, questions don't have to be bad. It's just even really thinking about those students that we know that are especially vulnerable, that might shut down when faced with a question, or when faced with a question that maybe is a little bit too hard for their language skills, and they turn inward and no longer engage. Some kids can be really resilient with questions and they can handle it. And that's all great. I think we just want to meet, we talked about this in a prior episode too, we just want to meet individuals where they're at in the moment, developmentally, with their language skills and also in terms of their self-regulation. So as we use this positive communication style where we're mindful of the demands that we're placing, we're therefore supporting the student to continue staying engaged and open to learning. So that's always the foundation and the purpose of why we're thinking about our language style. And sometimes even I think, you know, if you kind of carry that with you, if you understand the purpose of why we're mindful of demands, that might help, you know, a teacher be able to do it, because they understand why it might be especially important for certain students. But then if we go back, just things that I think about is any question that you might ask, you can always rephrase it as a comment, maybe starting with, you know, I'm really curious about your thoughts on X, Y, and Z. Or I'd love to hear what you're thinking about this. Or I wonder if anybody might be able to answer this question. So you're still getting at the function of questions, which is curiosity about the other person's knowledge and experiences, but you're framing it in a way that's invitational rather than demanding, or demanding with time pressure in the moment to come up with an answer really quickly. And another thing that just can be helpful in terms of asking questions or being curious is just to, you know, let some kids know that they can have thinking time. Like maybe a student could say, or excuse me, a teacher could say, you know, I'm curious and I'm interested in learning about your knowledge, or what things you might remember about this story. So I'm going to ask you questions. And I want you to know you can take the time to think that you need. And if you need help, you can always ask for help. Or if you need to hear it again, you can always ask me to say it again. So even within the question asking, you can kind of filter in some opportunities and strategies for self-advocacy, which can really help those kids who might be struggling and might tend to shut down. And give them permission to think, because I think a lot of times students don't know that that's an okay thing. So just as a teacher, carving out that time and naming it as a strategy and letting everybody know that it's okay, I think can also be really important compliments to the teaching process.
Yeah, that allowance for thinking time is so important. And it's hard for us as adults a lot of times, is that we want to fill in that quiet space while a child is thinking, whereas we just need to let them have that time and space. So sometimes, even though we've used lots of declarative language, it doesn't always go as planned. So are there other strategies we need to consider?
Yeah, well, sometimes I just think about like getting really specific about the moment at hand for ourselves. Like I think one thing is if we ourselves are feeling a little bit stressed or worried, like having our own declarative statements for self-talk might be really helpful in the moment for ourselves. If something has gone awry in the classroom and we want to help everybody get back on track, we can talk out loud and just be transparent with students. Sometimes that's really helpful because we're just showing them that we too can be vulnerable. We too don't always have all the answers. So sometimes I even might say something to students like, wow, that totally didn't go as I thought it was going to. And now I'm just trying to figure out what is the best step forward. So even by us talking out loud in those moments, we can really model self-regulation strategies, managing uncertainty, sharing vulnerability, and then navigating problem solving. So just by being transparent around those things with our students.
Yeah, you make me feel a lot better about saying, wow, that didn't go as planned, when things often go sideways for me.
Right.
Yeah. And it's nice for students to see how we problem solve too. So that that modeling of our internal thinking process is such a great opportunity for students to learn as well.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Linda. I've learned a lot more about how I can take my use of declarative language into the classroom, and I can take it hopefully to the next level, so I can create an even more welcoming space for students when I'm engaging with them. Dave, did you have any other questions for Linda?
No, I just really appreciate her coming on and going through some of those questions with us, and just kind of giving us a little more information about how to use that in a classroom, right? As a teacher, you're often wondering in the moment, what should I do next? What statement should I make? And helping to know that we're inviting kids into that conversation versus, you know, maybe potentially stressing them out with a question, right? And I think that's really important for everyone as we, you know, move forward with declarative language and really try and understand how we can best support our students in the classroom. So thank you, Linda. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, Linda and Dave, and look forward to having more conversations with you, Linda, about the use of declarative language in our classrooms.
Thank you. We'll see you again.
Thank you for listening to the Social Learning Road Trip, a podcast presented by Upper Grand District School Board. For educators within our board, you can access show notes and links to our other podcast episodes on our SharePoint page under Innovation Lab. Other listeners can find our podcast and additional information on our parent website at www.ugdsb.ca/CLS parents. If you would like to find out more information about declarative language and co-regulation, please visit Linda Murphy's site at declarativelanguage.com.